Chapter 49, Flotsam and Jetsam. In 1986, Ronald Reagan signed a new law into effect. Manufacturers had been on the receiving end of several expensive lawsuits pertaining to their aluminum-precipitated diphtheria, pertussis, and tetanus vaccines. Although the exact number is unknown, children had died after receiving the DPT shot, and the companies who had manufactured them were losing money fast. They banded together and threatened to stop making pediatric vaccines unless the government would protect them from lawsuits. Otherwise, they would all go out of business. After extensive lobbying and public relations efforts, pharmaceutical companies were able to get the protection they had been hoping for. A new law, called the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act, prevented them from being sued by parents of children injured by a pediatric vaccine. Instead, the parents would petition a special government court created specifically for these types of cases, an agreement by which pharmaceutical companies would not pay a cent. Any payouts from settlements through the special court would be funded by a tax added to each shot, a small surcharge included in the price of every pediatric vaccine administered and paid for, not by pharmaceutical companies, but by the parents through their insurance providers. This law was initially met with excitement, as it appeared to be a win-win. Manufacturers could continue making their products, and families who did experience a problem had a neutral, government-run court that could compensate them for their injuries. After a few years, however, it became clear the law heavily favored the vaccine manufacturers. They paid nothing for the existence of the program and were completely protected from any harm their products might cause. With the adult population, they were still capable of being sued for their faulty products, but if the vaccine injured a child, they would suffer nothing. As one can imagine, this effect did not serve to increase the safety of their products. In fact, it had the opposite effect. In 1983, the vaccines being recommended to children were remarkably few compared to what they might receive today. Because of lingering concerns about its effectiveness, the aluminum-precipitated diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis shot had been expanded to 5 separate doses. Since 1942, when the pertussis shot had been added, the schedule had remained essentially the same. In the 1960s, children began receiving the oral polio vaccine, and in the 1970s, the MMR was added. For the fastidious mother, that amounted to 6 actual injections, 5 DPT shots, 1 MMR shot, plus the oral polio vaccine administered in drops by mouth. Due to improvements in scientific technology and the indemnification the government had provided them, pharmaceutical companies began aggressive efforts to have additional vaccines added to the pediatric program. Their efforts were a marvelous success, and over the next 20 years, the pediatric vaccine schedule would explode with new additions. By 1989, the new Haemophilus influenza B vaccine began being recommended to infants, and by 1993, the recommendation of a single dose of the HIV vaccine was changed to 4. All 4 shots contained aluminum hydroxide. The next year, a hepatitis B vaccine began being recommended for babies. The shot was initially developed for drug users, sexually promiscuous individuals, and others at high risk for contracting the infection. In 1994, it was inexplicably recommended that it be administered at birth and an additional 3 other times to every infant born in the United States, whether their mother had tested positive or negative for the infection. Each of the 4 injections made use of aluminum hydroxide to help boost the immune response to the vaccine. 2 years later, in 1996, a chickenpox vaccine began being recommended to children. Like the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccines, this was a live virus vaccine and didn't contain any aluminum. In 1999, a rotavirus vaccine was added to the schedule, but would be removed the next year because of concerns it was causing problems. In 2000, they began recommending a hepatitis A vaccine for certain populations, a shot which employed aluminum. The very next year, in 2001, 4 doses of a pneumococcal shot were added to the childhood schedule, and each dose contained the aluminum adjuvant. At this point in time, the rates of autism began to take a steep upward turn. The steady rise that had begun in the 1970s with the addition of the MMR shot turned skyward. In 2002, the influenza shot began to be recommended to certain groups of children, and by 2004, all children were asked to receive the vaccine every year. In 2006, the aluminum-containing meningococcal shot was added to the childhood schedule for certain individuals, and one of the doses of the hepatitis A shot from 2000 was changed from special populations to all children. The next year, in 2007, both aluminum-containing doses of the hepatitis A vaccine began to be recommended for children at 12 and 18 months. Within 20 years of the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act becoming law, the number of aluminum-containing vaccines children were receiving had more than doubled. Rather than 6 injections, they might now receive between 25 and 30, depending on how one counts. Unfortunately, the steep increase in the late 1900s would go even higher, from the 1 in 10,000 the autistic rate was originally estimated to be, to the 1 in 150 of the late 1990s, no one believed it could go any higher. During the last decade, strict measures to enforce vaccination, including preventing children from attending public schools, camps, and sporting events, were enacted. Insurance companies began offering incentives to doctors to more heavily enforce vaccination, and media outlets began to aggressively fearmonger outbreaks of what were once considered to be innocuous childhood illnesses. The result was vaccination uptake rates went up, an expected result of children being refused school or medical aid if they didn't perfectly adhere to the vaccination schedule, as specified by government health officials at the behest of their pharmaceutical colleagues. Unfortunately, autism rates have doubled, even tripled since then, and are now estimated to be as high as 1 in 28. Health officials have attempted to assuage the fears of concerned parents by saying this incredible rise was due to changes in criteria used to identify the disorder, a time-honored tradition amongst epidemiologists also used to explain the sudden appearance of polio and Zika. For those able to confront reality, the actual change in numbers is frightening. Studies have proven that the rise in autism cannot be accounted for by a change in diagnosis alone. Between the doubling of vaccines children receive to the increased medical and governmental pressure to submit children to the procedures, something in the last 20 years has caused this dramatic spike. But hidden amongst the surge may lie an even more sickening trigger, an inheritance of sorts no child would ever ask to receive.